Hello, I am Paige Albiniak, Editorial Director of Promax, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. Today, I am talking to Dan Pappalardo and Kevin R. Tari of Los Angeles-based Troika Mission Group. Dan is founder, chief strategy officer, and all-around creative guru, while Kevin is head of business development. Kevin will be joining us at Promax Europe in Amsterdam, March 25th to the 26th. So we're going to preview his talk a little bit here, and then we're going to go on to discuss some of the other things Troika's been working on, including the rebrand of Velocity to Motor Trend Network and a lot of the agency's sports work. Hello, Kevin, and hello, Dan, and welcome to the podcast. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thanks, Paige. Yes, thank you for having us.
All right, so Dan, Troika has gone through some evolutions lately. One of the big things is you guys acquired Mission Media in the summer. How would you describe what Troika Media is currently doing?
Yeah, we saw a need to support brands beyond kind of individual projects and individual activations. And we really, big part of what we've done for clients since we started the company was to help them build their opportunities around their brand. And, the history of Troika has been really great at this brand building piece. But we, with Troika Mission Group, we created a platform that enables us to add new capabilities to the company. And there are two main pieces that we have added since forming the group. And one of them is the programmatic side of it, the performance media and data analytics piece. And so that is a group that helps us provide insight going into, that helps drive the decisions we're making around building a brand or building a marketing campaign. And then also on the back end, how do we target the audiences more specifically, and how do we continue to do that more effectively? And then the mission piece is helps us on the activation side. So, where the performance piece drives insights, we build brands, and then the mission folks help us enhance or build out our ability to activate campaigns. And so specifically around live activations and then tying the live activations to campaigns, so traditional campaigns, as well as the amplification through PR, social media, and the like. So essentially, we're building an agency that helps clients throughout that journey or throughout that life cycle of the brand.
Right. So, and then how are you finding, you've added this data piece. How are you finding that you are using data to shape and guide your creative?
Yeah, it happens actually at two stages. So there, we develop insights throughout the process. So, we have, it's essentially a research piece of it that enables us to have more sort of knowledge and sense of consumers and effectiveness of platforms and such going into the planning process, right? And into the sort of the building out of the creative. And then on the back end, it's actually the media piece. So how do we use machine learning to essentially really super target communication. So it's the programmatic piece. So it informs at the beginning of the phase, and it's an ongoing tool for the performance, for maximizing the performance of all of the placement and the communication. And then that's essentially like a loop that feeds both the front end of our process and the ongoing performance of any media that's out there.
It's funny because I hesitate to call myself a creative, but as a person who mostly writes and then has analytics go against that, and then of course I bristle about having to adjust my creative to whatever the analytics are saying. But I wonder in companies like yours, when you're sort of creating something, then you're measuring it, then you're adjusting it, then you're measuring it. Have you found a sort of balance in that there still has to be creative, but you also have to be able to measure and adjust? Or do you find that data guides that more than you would expect?
You know, it happens kind of at two levels. There's definitely the sort of the bigger insight pieces that drive the creative thinking. And so where creative directors and writers and strategists are involved, right? And there's a piece of it that happens there that are kind of bigger pieces. And then as you move down into the sort of ongoing feed, there's a bunch of things that happen that are essentially automated, right? And so that's happening at the, you know, at that programmatic level where it's like we're tweaking a word here or a color there or an image there and all that. And that our creative directors aren't typically not involved at that detailed level.
Okay. All right. And then so you guys have made these changes and evolved in this way. How are you finding that what you're doing, how are you aligning what you're doing with the current somewhat chaotic media landscape? And how difficult are you finding it to stay aligned since it's changing so quickly?
Yeah, I think it is the catalyst for why we created Terrific Mission Group and that whole platform, right? I mean, the world is moving quickly, it's evolving, the clients are evolving, what we do is evolving, consumers are more fragmented than ever, and their behaviors are changing and all that. So we really needed to create a business platform. I saw a need to create a business platform that was that I could grow and we could evolve more nimbly and quickly, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's really built for this kind of thinking, which as an independent company was more difficult. It was difficult for us to move that quickly. So it really is all about reacting to the marketplace out there, and all we know is what we know now. I mean, we know it's going to continue to change, so it has to be built kind of, you know, it can't be fully planned out. It has to be built to be nimble.
Right. So in practice, that means, let's say Network A comes to you. Let's say in the past, Network A came to you and wanted a rebrand. Maybe you would just do a rebrand, and the result of the rebrand or the feedback you would get would just be like, do they think it's cool? Do they not think it's cool? But you maybe would not have anything to measure it against. But now when you go in and do creative, you also have to have the ability to understand how the amplification of it, the performance of it. It can't just be creative for creative sake.
100%. And that comes from the clients, right?
I mean,
that we've seen a shift. And it really comes from the idea that, you know, that media had a captive audience, certainly television had a captive audience for a long time. And so there were certain behaviors that we didn't have to worry about a lot of things, right?
We
basically drove people to, you know, hey, watch this night, that kind of thing. But now everyone is facing so much competition, and competition within media, but also just competition for attention. And so everybody is measuring everything, and no one is making decisions sort of by the gut.
Right, right. That's kind of sad a little bit, but yeah. All right, so talking about how the media is changing, Kevin, you're going to be speaking at Promax Europe in Amsterdam about how brand and marketing behavior is different for over-the-top players or OTT players than for traditional and traditional broadcasting cable players. So can you preview the talk a little for us? I don't want you to blow the whole thing, but just talk a little bit about how you're seeing the difference between OTT and broadcasting cable.
Sure. Well, the idea behind the session is that we have a lot more choice today, but it's also become a lot more frustrating than ever. And it's about to get a lot worse with all the new OTT launches that are out there on the horizon.
Yeah.
And, you know,
than ever for who? For clients or for consumers or for both?
Well, both, actually. You know, from the consumer's side, you know, TV wasn't perfect, but at least it was organized and it didn't frustrate people. And now, you know, the time we have to consume media of any kind is really being challenged. And, you know, it's interesting, like, especially I drive down La Brea toward, you know, the 10 freeway here in Los Angeles every morning and every night. And and it's a major corridor for advertising. Mm. Sorry?
I said, I'm sorry.
Oh, I am too. Thank you. I know. And, you know, there's this barrage of show marketing all the way down, you know, and titles are continually being launched at us, and processing it has become really overwhelming. We're either trying to keep up with so many things that we feel we're missing something, or we're talking about so many things at once that nothing feels special anymore. And so if everything that comes at us is this moment that's worthy of our time and our attention, then the impact is eventually lost. And I think we're seeing that from the major players right now. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at how OTT platforms can rise above that chaos and how they can create and maintain brand loyalty in the new environment, which I don't think we've seen a lot of. We're going to look at how they can balance brand with content marketing and how they can reach new audiences who aren't already in their ecosystem, which I know from a client side is a challenge right now. And so the format is going to be a little more conversational. I'm not going to try and have an answer for everything, but we're all going to kind of get together as a group and start asking ourselves, what if?
If you had an answer for everything, you could start a whole separate business.
I would be retired at the end of
right.
the year.
Exactly.
It'd be fantastic.
I'm going to ask you one follow-up just because it's near and dear to my heart, which is when you talk about building a brand with content marketing, can you just tell me, again, not to blow the session, but can you just preview that a little bit for me, what that means and what you talk about when you say brands, when you guide brands to work with content marketing?
Yeah, well, it's actually balancing branding and content marketing. So a lot of, you know, it's the continual battle that started with linear television, the war between, not the war, but, you know, the kind of the debate between is are there truly brands in entertainment, or is the brand the sum of its content? And I think that there's an argument to be had for both of those, but I think the danger of relying just on content marketing is that, you know, there are peaks and valleys and there are shows that have a lifespan. And so what happens in between, and
right.
how do you attract people to begin with, especially as people don't associate the content with the platform, and more, I think that's happening. So I think there has to be a balance between building a brand and pushing your content and marketing it successfully. And so we're going to look at that. And I think it's particularly challenging in the OTT world.
For these brands, would you describe content marketing as using your content to market, meaning you're Hulu and you have The Handmaid's Tale and you're using pieces of that content to market, and then maybe you're jumping onto some, I'm making this up as I go along, but like you're jumping onto Mother's Day or something and putting out a piece of content to get into that stream. So it's not like you're purely marketing, but you're drawing from what you already got, what you already have to expand that user base.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be an association, I think, or a stronger association between the content. And that's what I mean. I mean, marketing the content, not necessarily content marketing, like creating content for marketing, although that's part of it as well. There has to be more of an association between the brand and the content. And in fact, I would even say that, like, how do you build more around the brand? How do you build more of a brand experience beyond just the shows, beyond just the platform, you know, like Disney has done, or any, you know, number of great entertainment brands have done. When you think about it, you don't just think about individual titles. You think about this whole, all these associations with the brand that make you want to, that make you attracted to the brand. But I think we're really lacking that with, you know, the newer OTT platforms, even the bigger, more established ones, probably because it's more of the Wild West.
Right.
And it's newer.
What do you think? You know, I mean, right now we're in the middle of hearing about all this. You just had Kevin Reilly talking yesterday about how he thinks Warner Media is going to evolve into streaming. Iger was recently talking about Disney Plus. NBC Universal just announced its upcoming service. Iger also mentioned that Hulu's going to stay in place, so Disney Plus will be something different. But I think it's also interesting because the line between broadcast cable and OTT is getting really blurry, so it's hard to sort of tell what you're marketing, where you're marketing, and does that even matter? Does the platform even matter at this time?
You have to look at the brand as more of an entire ecosystem, I think, more than just any one individual platform. And I think Dan's going to talk about this a little bit too, but each platform has its purpose in the whole ecosystem. It has its own intersection with that viewer, that audience, throughout the day and throughout their lifetime and throughout their week. And so you have to really stop and think about how do each of those pieces intersect with your audience's life. And so it is a much bigger, broader way of thinking. It's not so simple. It's not just put a show on at 8 o'clock at night on a Wednesday and promote it and everybody shows up.
Yeah, so let's dig into that a little bit, Dan. So how do you guys approach you know, you're taking, let's say you're taking a network, or you're even taking a network with a specific piece of content. How do you approach creating a campaign that includes digital, mobile, social, as well as potentially linear branding?
Yeah. I think you start with the fan, and then, mm-hmm. you know, from there, you're thinking about how does media fit into their daily lives. So like you guys were just talking about, you know, we can't think of things as so much as discrete channels or TV versus streaming. I mean, it, you know, for the consumer, they don't understand it that way, right? And so it's just they can get to things in different ways now. And so instead of thinking about it from our point of view or from the like how we would describe it in the industry, we have to think about the fan, what they're looking for, and why they go to certain platforms. So, you know, it is, like Kevin said, more about an integrated ecosystem that serves a journey, right? That serves mm-hmm. a fan journey in the right way at the right time.
Okay, so can you, I don't know if you want to draw, a specific example. We are going to talk about some rebrands and branding campaigns that you guys have done. So maybe it's an opportunity for you to draw from one of those, but maybe just talk a little bit about how you create that journey for a fan.
Yeah, we have to think about each of the platforms and how they fit into the lives of, you know, of the fan. Like, you know, so, you know, some are one-way conversations where it's about leaning back and being entertained and informed, you know. Others are more two-way where it's about engaging the fan, and then there's others that are about a community and it's about sharing, right? And so, you know, you approach it from those points of view. Okay, that's what this individual platform provides to us, and so how does that one puzzle piece in a bigger kind of a bigger experience that we're creating around that brand?
Do you find that your clients come to you and say, we feel like we're a lean back brand, but we'd rather be more of a community? Do you get that kind of request ever and have to work to create something that might allow them to create that community?
I think every client is looking, I don't know, everyone seems to be focused on the engaging, you know, the audience and the fans more than just a passive experience, right? So social's huge, right, with every client these days. So I think it is about integrating, and it's not, you know, I hear, you know, digital led and, you know, social first and all that. I think it has to be ecosystem. Like it, for one person, it might be, you know, socially led, but for another one, it might be sit back led.
Right. So you guys just did the rebrand of Velocity, which is owned by Discovery, and it's now Motor Trend Network. They rebranded. I think they flipped the switch in mid-November. That's a interesting one to me, because I do feel like, having looked at a lot of those spots, I feel like Velocity, now Motor Trend Network, is very much of a community, and that if you're watching that network, you are definitely a car fan. If you are not a car fan, you are not watching. Do you, when you were working on that rebrand, can you just talk a little bit about what the brief was that they gave you, where you started, where you took it?
Yeah, I mean, it's indicative of kind of what's happening out in the world. I mean, it really was a linear property with Velocity that had access, you know, to a broader, a bit of a broader audience than Motor Trend, right? Which was, you know, a 60-year-old brand, an iconic brand, but had a highly niche audience. It was kind of motorheads and people buying cars, right? That kind of thing. And so the concept was, can we merge these two things together and create an idea or a new platform around the Motor Trend brand, which had some higher recognition, that was aimed at sort of the broader appeal of automobiles. So it was really, you know, this idea that, you know, was based on the insight that, you know, that actually everyone has a car story, right? There's car, we use the museum here in Los Angeles, the Peterson mm-hmm. Museum, the auto, as kind of the, you know, analogy for all of this, where if you go to the Peterson Museum, it's all about cars, right? And certainly motorheads go there. But almost kids enjoy it, you know, adults enjoy it. And, you know, and so it was about that idea of creating a broader platform around this idea of how cars play in your lives. And I know
it's
that they're,
cause...
you know, the, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I know that, the intent with the programming was to, you know, to start evolving that way as well, create a program that has broader reach.
Yeah, exactly. We were kind of repositioning them as more of a lifestyle brand. So we used motoring as a jumping off point, but it was a jumping off point for all kinds of these great subjects and content that could revolve around it. And by doing that, then we could attract, you know, completely new audiences while still staying true to that diehard motoring enthusiast. It's kind of similar to, you know, what Scripps has done so well with travel and food. You know,
yeah.
Food isn't just Stan and Stir, and travel isn't just Samantha Brown getting on a cruise ship, you know. it's those were great, but now they've really broadened out, you know, their content using those, that same core as the center of it. And so Motor Trend's going to be essentially doing the same thing.
Do you have an example of content you developed for Motor Trend that serves that purpose?
Well, Motor Trend has got a lot of new content developing. I don't know how much of it they've released yet. What we were doing is creating a brand platform that allowed all of those different types of content to live, you know, harmoniously and all make sense together under that same brand. And then we also created a brand spot, actually a brand campaign that reintroduced the brand and what it stands for now, which you'll be seeing on air pretty soon, I think.
And the brand's built to tell stories that are relatable to different people. So it's not, the brand's not built around, you know, cars and our love of cars as much as it is around stories that people can relate to, where cars are a central component.
I have seen a lot of the, maybe not the rebrand creative, but I've seen a lot of Velocity and Motor Trend creative over the years. And I'm not a car fan, but I'm really like, a car is for me to get from here to there. Otherwise, I'm not too worried about it. But the car creative is always great and compelling. Like, there's something about seeing a beautiful car that will always lure you in.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a huge car fan, so this was like a dream project
to
be on. But yeah, and you know, we had a lot of experience, a lot of different people and drivers, and just, you know, the stories that came out of just the development process as we kind of looked to how we were redefining the brand was really interesting. And I think you're going to see that really seep into the whole network and the whole brand now.
Do you feel like there were things about rebranding to Motor Trend from Velocity that gave you any advantages in the branding process?
Well, it was an opportunity to contemporize Motor Trend. And we went, oh my gosh, we went around and around, even just in the logo development. I mean, Motor Trend has such a legacy, and we thought about how we look at it in new ways and how does it look through the eyes of a 14 or a 15-year-old, or, you know, a gearhead who's, you know, been restoring cars his entire life. And it really let us kind of reimagine it. So the exploration process was really interesting. And so it was not easy, actually, because of that. It was not easy to land on something, because we really opened up the world to a lot of new possibilities then with the Motor Trend brand. In the end, I think we kind of came back to like not wanting to completely reinvent what that brand is, but really just bring it into the modern era, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Which is always the question with these type of things. It's, you know, how much equity are you building on and how much change are you looking for? And so the process, the branding process where, you know, we go through is about testing those waters and figuring out with the client what's the best business strategy.
Yeah. I mean, I just think with like you said, Motor Trend is a 60-year-old brand. So in a way, if you want to modernize it, but in another way, you want to be able to hold on to that brand equity. So striking that balance seems, could be a little challenging.
Yeah, that was the constant debate. You know, we spent a lot of time on the East Coast and the clients spent a lot of time out here, and probably more than I've seen on any job I've been involved in here so far, a lot of really teaming up together and just really hashing through different ideas. It's, you know, it's got its advantages and it's got its challenges, but everyone was really in sync, and we all kind of came to the same place in the end.
All right. So from cars, let's go to sports, which isn't that big of a leap. You guys have done a lot of sports work recently. I'm going to list some things. You rebrand, and you can correct me if I have these wrong, but you've rebranded the Golf Network, Major League Lacrosse, ESPN's SEC and ACC networks, the Alliance of American Football, and there's even some more things besides that, Flow Sports, et cetera. So, Kevin, why do you think brands are coming, have come, do come to Troika for their creative needs?
Yeah, I think more than anything, it's our ability to connect brands with fans. A lot of that probably came out of our, you know, all the effort and time we put into our big study on fandom that we spent a good year, 14 months on to really understand fandom and how it's cultivated and what the business implications are. But now it's our ability to think like a fan and to think through and understand that fan journey. What does their daily life look like in relation to the brand? And to help brands then frame and tell great sports stories and to continually innovate around how we do that and how fans get the information they want. But it's also because of our expertise for many, many years, our expertise in sports presentation and at the end, the quality of work that we've become known for.
Yeah, sports is, it's kind of interesting because sports fans are really the most rabid fans of all. Mm-hmm. And the rebrands are really, the way we think about rebrands for sports is about enhancing the sports fan experience, right? That, like, we talk about that a lot here. And so, you know, there's a big emphasis on things like rituals, right? Like the pride of the team and all those symbols and things that come with that and the activities around that. There's a big emphasis on story. So how did we get to this moment in the season? You know, those types of things. Mm-hmm. And there's a big emphasis on the information graphics. So, you know, how can we make, you know, we're always looking at innovating on that info systems where you're making the information around, you know, the stats and the where you are in the game and all of that information. How are you making that easier or more relevant as our attention spans shift?
Do you feel like sports fans want the information in the easiest possible to digest way, or do they respond to using that information to tell a story?
I think both. Right. Definitely. You know, there's a lot about like how do you make sure that the information that's on the screen is quickly communicating to the people who are, you know, more and more stepping in and out of like watching something. Right. But then there's the information is also used for sort of deeper things. And I tell you, I think we're going to see more of this as things like sports betting starts to become a bigger piece because it's going to be the stats. It's going to be those things that become this sort of catalyst for that. And then now, you know, we're doing a lot of work with sort of taking that whole sports viewing experience that we know from television and bringing that to smaller mobile devices. So we have a lot of projects that are around that kind of streaming, you know, mobile phones and, you know, that type of thing. And what does it mean to have, you know, how do you have still have an immersive experience? How do you get the information there and all that with where people are engaged in a different way?
When you are doing, you know, branding work for all these different kinds of sports clients, how challenging do you find it to give each one of them their own brand personality?
I mean, that's the job, right?
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, we just launched, we're working on two projects for ESPN that are essentially competing channels.
SEC and the client, and ACC.
Yeah. And the client came to us specifically on both of them specifically to help make sure that we were differentiating these things, which would have been more difficult, right, if they were to be going out to different agencies or there was a competitive thing or all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's what we do. It's the job. And what we, you know, how we get there is we work a lot with the clients to understand what's their point of view. How do they see themselves differentiated in the way they program for sports and in the kind of, you know, the voice that they use in sports. And we try to enhance or we try to build off of and leverage how they see the way they're different from the other platforms.
And then you mentioned that you did a study on fandom, which you said took more than a year. So in this conversation, we will not be able to dive into everything that study said. But can you give me just some top level takeaways you had about fandom and how you are applying it to branding?
It came, you know, a lot of insight that basically drives how we think about customers today and how we think about essentially brand attachment. What is it that makes people like love things, and what is how's that fit into their lives? And by understanding those things, it enables us to build brands or build communication and marketing or build engagement that feeds that fandom. And equally important, doesn't break the rules of fandom. So one of the things about fandom is trust, and you can't break that. And so, you know, there are things that came out of it, like identity was one of the most important sort of pillars of this idea of, you know, why people are fans. It's how they use fandom to as an expression and as a way to understand who they are and how they express themselves in the world, right? Sports fans couldn't be more of an obvious version of that, but also all the cons, you know, and you know, so we, you know, we see that. And so that, we think about, you know, there are entire brands that we approach as identity brands. And so there are, you know, thinking that's come out of, these studies that we've done that have helped informed, you know, how we understand like the relationship between, you know, people and these things that they are fans of, right? And in for a lot of our clients, it's the content or it's the platform or it's the sports team.
Do you, in acquiring Mission and then adding that data and analytics capability, do you feel like that's also allowing you to employ psychographics in these campaigns? So meaning, you know, you're looking at the fandom for, I'm just picking one out randomly, like you're looking for the fandom for SEC. Do you then, are you able to sort of draw from that information to create assets that you think will be more engaging or more sticky for fans?
I would say, you know, the data analytics piece is a little more quantitative and versus the qualitative. So we have to work to make sure we're balancing sort of, you know, numbers data, right, machine data, and the more, you know, human drivers, right, the things that are in the hearts and souls of people. And so we have to do both and apply both to our thinking.
Do you get some of that through focus groups? Do you actually go and talk to fans, or how do you figure that piece of it out?
For the qual, yeah, it's focus groups, but it's also things like, digital ethnography and these different tools that we have now for essentially, you know, conducting ethnography today, right? So instead of sitting, you know, with the community in their house and understanding how what their behaviors are, we're able to, you know, use apps essentially, right? Where someone's carrying around, you know, charged with, documenting, recording themselves when a certain thing happens in their life, in their daily lives. So we get this like crazy cool, videos and testimonials from real people out there as they're reacting to. I mean, we did, you know, really great case study around how fans change the way they talk about or their relationship with a show when it's a new show and it was just launched through to the end of the season, right? And you can literally hear the words that they use to describe their, you know, reaction to that show, like throughout the season, shift, right, from being less, from being sort of, you know, second, third person to moving into first person, and it's more about me and I and my show, right? And so you get these opportunities, like you couldn't do that in a focus group,
right.
You know, yeah, and so there's just really awesome tools these days to gather better information, more information on what's driving the way people
are behaving. Through social media, how they're reacting across social media, that same
exactly.
Yeah. All right. So coming to the end, but and you kind of mentioned this before, but when you look at the state of the industry now, and I mentioned all these streaming services that are going to come online, what do you think that means for you? Is that feeling like that means more challenge? Does that mean more opportunity? Does that mean both?
Well, definitely. You know, I mean, brands are having to evolve more than ever, and they're having to speak to new audiences. We hear that all the time. You know, so they have to entertain change, to quote, you know, a phrase we like to use around here. So we have to constantly innovate, and we have to constantly get in the minds of the audience, and we have to help clients think about the whole landscape in new ways.
And how do you, what's your experience of it, Dan?
With change comes opportunity, right?
Yeah.
And I think it creates opportunity for brands. And those opportunities are kind of mind-blowing in some ways now because, you know, a TV network could be a lot of things today, right? What a TV network used to be, right? And it could be, you know, obviously a Red Bull or, you know, it could be a Nike, right? So it starts to become a bigger world. And it's a lot of opportunities for marketing companies and branding companies because with this, like, change and this consolidation and this sort of fragmentation comes a great need for some clarity and organization in the world, right? Like, if you, you know, if there were no choices in the world, you kind of don't need brands, right? But when the more choices and the more confusing it gets, the more you need branding and marketing to help people get what they want, when they want it, how they want it.
Yeah, and to understand even what it is that they want and what is available.
Which is where we're at right now, right? Like, in a way, there's more content than ever, but we're all a bit frustrated finding the right content, right? It's messy, and every one of our clients are looking for ways to try to simplify this experience that we're all having as consumers of content.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of talk about, I don't know, the death of traditional TV, which I don't think anything really dies. I think it just evolves into something else. But I do think it's a great time to be a company like Troika because you have your hands in all those different parts. So as it expands, so can you expand. So to me, that seems like amazing. Challenging, but amazing.
And I think it's the case for all of us in the industry. I think what's happening out there, and we're seeing this where folks who, you know, who've built their careers in media and entertainment, you see them popping up in different types of companies, right, that are ancillary to media because so many companies are looking at content and engagement and fans, right? Mm-hmm. They're looking at that as the new advertising, the new marketing, right? And, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, again, everything's a cycle, right? Like, if you think about where this all started in television, right? It started where the brands were the showrunners, right? Like, the soap operas and all that kind of thing. You know, we're moving back into a world where who owns what, right? Who owns the media? Who owns the content, right? That's being reshuffled now. And so you're seeing folks that have the experience that we all have from the industry looking at these new paradigms and applying the education that we have from being, you know, media companies that have to create a lot of content to build audiences and fans and then monetize them, right? So that's now being applied to all around and in a much broader sphere. And so it's exciting for us, but I think it's exciting for everybody in our industry that while there's an aspect of the business that is definitely contracting, the traditional is contracting, no doubt, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But it's expanding in all kinds of other ways.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Kevin will deepen our understanding of some of this when he speaks in Amsterdam in March. And we will look forward to seeing what else you guys have got for us throughout this year. Thank you guys both so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank awesome. You.
All right, and have a great day. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director at Promax. Andres Trujillo, Promax's social media and community manager, edited this podcast. Video helper provided the music. Digital content producers Kate LaCaire-Marion and Kayla Marie Hardaway contribute to Daily Brief. You can hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at promax_global. You can also email us at dailybrief@promax.org. And please subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.